I'm Daniel Chacon. You are about to hear a conversation that Timzy Hernandez and I had with Denise Chavez concerning the Day of the Dead, the celebration that we have every year here in Aztlan to honor our dead, a tradition that comes from Mexico. This is part one, so stick around.
Hi, I'm Timzy Hernandez.
And I'm Daniel Chacon.
Right now, you're joining us for our annual Dia de los Muertos special Words on a Wire edition.
I think we've done this three times or something, right? But
that's
today,
right.
Today we are honored to invite a special guest. Everybody knows who you are, Denise
yes.
Chavez. Thank you so much for joining us on this special show.
Oh, I'm really, truly honored. Thank you so much. To be within the group of the Papichulos is excellent.
Well, you know, I was going to read a formal bio because you're multiple, published multiple books, won multiple awards. I just want to say what you have meant to me right from the beginning when I picked up Last of the Menu Girls. Oh my God, I was blown away. And this is when it was coming out. When it came out with Arte Público years and years ago, it was a brand new book. And everybody's like, who is this Denise Chavez? And I tell you, I love that book. I love the title. It's one of my top titles of all my favorite books. And I love that story, the title story. As I recall, it's a longer story and there's some stream of conscious in it. And it's just really a beautiful work. And then after that, you came out with Face of an Angel. And this was like huge. I mean, this really rocked the Latinx literary world, and it was a beautiful novel. And since then, you've come out with so many other books, including the Taco Chronicles.
Taco Testimonies.
And which was also a fantastic book. And you've just been doing book after book. And so I'm just, you know, incredibly honored to be in your virtual presence here today. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm honored to be here too. People often call it the Last of the Menudo Girls, but it's not. I just got back from a conference in Santa Fe, and it was very moving. A young scholar, Kimberly Blake, did an article on Willow Game, and I wept through it. It was beautiful to know that people are still reading those stories. And she did something that was so phenomenal. It was about trees. No one has ever associated my work with nature, the environment, and those triangle of trees. So it's great to be here. Que vivan los muertos y los antepasados.
Right. Absolutely. And I want to add a little bit to that also, to all of those accolades that Daniel just mentioned as well, Denise. But for me personally, obviously coming across your books at an early on in my career, but for me personally, I think what informed a lot of even what I do today, is your storytelling ability, your performance, your presentation. It's very much to me, yes, you are an author and an organizer and community activist and all those wonderful things. But for me, I feel like you are more, I look at you more and in the tradition of oral testimony, of oral storytelling, the storyteller tradition. And to me, that right there has really influenced my own work for many, many years. So I'm honored to have you for that reason.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. Well, it is important to tell a good story and to present your story. We come from the oral tradition, don't we?
Yes.
And remember those tios that told a good story, the tias that really got into it. That's where we come from.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. In fact, when Tim and I were talking about doing this show again to honor our dead, among other things, and to, you know, pay tribute to the Day of the Dead and the traditions behind it, we thought, who would be great on this show to talk about this? Because you have, every time I see you, I feel like I'm not only seeing you, but I'm seeing the antepasados behind you. And even the future in front of you. And so I just sense that you have this incredible connection with those who have passed on.
Sometimes too much so. recently I had an experience driving back from Santa Fe, and the spirit of Jim Sagal followed me.
No way.
Yeah.
It was a very profound storyteller from Española.
I remember.
Won the Casa de las Americas Award, even though he learned Spanish later. Sometimes those spirits follow you, haunt you. You may not want them there, but they need to be. He spoke to me, and it. I really need to write about that experience, because he killed himself at the Bosque de la Pache, and so when I go through there, all of our places, our lives are charged with moments of transcendence. The veil is very thin, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right.
So you turn the corner and you see your dead mother, and you go down the block and there's the dog that you love. So yes, I had that experience recently.
I'm really stunned by that, because it was just, I am not lying, I think 2 days ago when I was thinking about him, and I haven't thought about him in maybe 10 years, because I don't even know if his books are available yet, but I remember when he died, and I was thinking, you know, is it worthwhile for me to go back into his literature to read it again and to introduce it to a new generation of readers? Because I'm afraid he's not as widely read as he was, but I haven't gone into his book again. I don't even know if I have the copy again, but this is kind of, I don't know, to me, it's kind of synchronous that you bring him up. Of everyone we could have brought up, you're bringing up the one I was thinking of, and like thinking, well, maybe I need, you know, maybe there's some calling or something to look into his work again.
Yes. And it was 2 days ago exactly that I had that experience, driving through the hills of Nuevo Mexico coming from Santa Fe. So yes, he was talking to you too, and saying that, yes, please.
Wow. Because I hadn't thought about him seriously and I don't know how long. I said 10 years, but it was probably actually more than that, because when I first read him, I was in grad school, and he was on our minds for a while because we were just getting into Chicanx literature, and he was one of the first writers that I read. I think, was it Arte that published him as well? His first
book?
I don't remember who it was.
No, I think it was UNM and other people, but no, Arte Publico, no.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, this, you know, definitely is a confirmation.
We forget about those writers that have not published in a while. You asked me about my books, and I have 6 novels that are unpublished. I have 4 children's books. I have several collections, you know, and I'm not going to get into the publishing industry, but it's jodido, is all I can say.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get published.
Yeah.
And for older writers, elder writers, it's very difficult. But he did speak to you. He spoke to me. The spirit spoke to me. And I think it's important for us to listen to those voices. You may not want to hear them, but they are every day present.
And Denise, you mentioned, I think this is kind of a question for you, and maybe for Daniel too as well. You mentioned that, you know, this only happened a couple of days ago for you, right? As you were driving through the hills there of Nuevo México, and the spirit of Jim Sagal sort of spoke to you. And then you said that, you know, you planned to write it, or to write about it in some way, or to process it through writing. And I'm wondering, for you, you know, as somebody myself who spends a lot of times in cemeteries doing a lot of work with the dead as well, I find that, you know, I always have to sort of, I can document and write as it's happening, but I really can't do much of that real deep processing work until much later. And, you know, so for you, do you feel like, and this is a question for you too, Daniel, do you feel like you do need some time and space in between from the moment that that happens, that moment of that connection happens, to when you can actually put down something in writing?
Well, yes and no. Sometimes it's immediate. Sometimes you just have to get up in the middle of the night. Mm. I recently wrote a comedy routine. I was thinking in bed, and I've always wanted to do stand-up comedy. So I got up and wrote a comedy routine. I'm ready to go.
Do one of your jokes.
Well, if they're not jokes, they're really stories.
Okay, that makes sense.
They're stories, but hey, I'd like to explore why Chicano men wear white socks. It's 120 degrees out there in the sun. They have socks up to their nalgas. They're suffering in their heat with their tennis, pero esos calcetines were never going to come down. I want to know why we have that fashion statement of those white socks.
Oh,
and then
great.
I explore the body head to what the thing about it is, sometimes you have to write immediately, sometimes you have to process. Mm-hmm. Believe me, I was thinking about Jim, and he spoke to me from purgatory. And I need to listen to that. Of course I prayed for him, and this sound went off in the car. I didn't know that I touched anything, but this incredible beep, shrill sound went off, and I didn't know what it was. I thought I was going to have to pull off the side of the road because I thought the car was going to blow up, but I don't know what happened. There was this shrill noise that went on for miles and miles and miles. I had to get off an arrest stop, and I don't know what happened, but it had something to do with something. And I figured something out. It was a rental car, and it stopped. And I think that was a message as well from Jim to say, listen, just listen. That's a lot of what our antepasados want.
To be listened to.
Yes.
Listen.
Yes.
Yeah, well, let's definitely welcome his spirit into the room, the virtual room here. You know, what really struck me by what you said that I was hoping we could unpack just a little bit is you said from purgatory, and I'm thinking about the dead as sometimes I think about it, whether I'm influenced by reading, you know, books about the dead or maybe just my own intuition, but sometimes you think about the dead, those who die and go to what you call purgatory, or it's in between place, before they become part of the light, as it were, are those the ones that we are able to communicate with? Or do you think that we can also communicate with those who have gone on to become one with everything?
Well, what do you think, Tim? I think we can communicate with people in hell as well, too. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
If you believe in hell, if you believe in purgatory, I grew up in a very Catholic world. My mother went to mass every day at 6:30. I am not a regular church goer, but I always have my rosario. So I think it's what is hell, really? What is purgatory? What is that in between state? I think we all have to determine that. I think we know what our individual hells are. We have our individual hells. I know what my hell is.
Yeah.
I wander through that oftentimes through my dreams.
Wow.
And so
I don't suppose you'd want to share details of your hell with us.
No, but I think I'm going to write about it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think writers, don't we write about those things that we don't know about, those people that we didn't know that well? And it's totally possible to communicate with people that are long deceased. They will speak to us. I'll find a letter from my mother who's been gone for 36 years. Don't you communicate with the antepasados, the two of you? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think life and death are of evolutionary processes. I mean, do I believe in reincarnation? Yes, I do. I think we can evolve, we change, we continue moving through layers of understanding and being, really. I hope to come back as a tree myself personally.
What kind of tree?
Well, that is undetermined yet. Maybe I'm not sure if it's going to be a cottonwood or a pine tree, maybe not, something, a desert willow, let's say a willow tree, a desert willow. I'm not sure.
I want to be a Mexican elder because it sounds like Mexican elder.
Yeah, that's right. and that's what was so moving when this young girl gave a platica about my three trees in the willow game. I was so grieved when my neighbor cut down two trees across the street. I went over and got some wood and apologized to them. They were fully grown, fully pine trees. Why would anybody do that? She didn't like the way they looked. And that reminded me of my landlord and neighbor in Nicaea when I had the community center. He was always chopping and killing things. And we think of our ancestors sometimes only as people, but our antepasados or those trees we loved, those animals that were close to us. Who hasn't grieved a dog or a cat or a tree? I think all sentient life, really, when you come down to it, those are our ancestors.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Day of the Dead. The Day of the Dead is what do you guys do on the day? Do we need to describe it? I think pretty much everybody knows what it is generally, but how do you celebrate? Do you set up an altar? Do you set aside time for reflection? Denise, how do you celebrate?
Well, my house is an altar, and I don't need to set up altars. I have an altar here in this room. I have rinconcitos that are altars. Every day is Day of the Dead for me.
Yeah.
And so I live with in this room I was born in. So I hope I'd like to die at the front of the house, but this is a room too that is sacred to me. I have set up many, many altars throughout the years. When we had a cultural center in Mesilla, we did sugar skull workshops for kids and set up hundreds of things, events around Day of the Dead. But now, you know, it's become so commercial that I'm kind of really repulsed by it. I can't, if I see another painted Katrina face by some gringa or some Mexicana out there that is outrageous, we're losing in a way what the real significance of Dia de Muertos is. Now, is it Dia de los Muertos? I've been corrected many times. A friend from Mexico says it's Dia de Muertos because it includes everybody and not Dia de los Muertos. I mean, it's a fine point, but it's become so commercial. You used to be able to go to Mesilla close to Las Cruces, and it was a sweet place of altars. One of the sweetest altars was to a dog. It could have been to your dog, and it was on a TV tray. And there was a little altar on this TV tray, and it was to this dog. And there was his little toothbrush on there. And it touched me so deeply. Jeez. But now you go in there and it's, you go on the plaza and the altars are still there, but they're tucked away among all the commercial stuff and the Dia de Muertos this and that. And the, you know, I don't know, all the schlock that is involved with Dia de los Muertos, the commercialism. I don't know what's happened. It's like Cinco de Mayo or 16 de Septiembre. What beer company is sponsoring Dia de Muertos? No, I haven't seen Coco. I really don't want to see it. I know it's cute, but I'm told it's cute, but you know what? It's too much. Es demasiado. Let's get back to what the real meaning is. Your grandmother.
Yes. And you know, thank you for saying that. I think that that's probably the most important point of it all is that, you know, we have to get back to what it's really about. Mm-hmm. Because when it's marketed, like saturating as it is that we see it today, it really allows people to bypass what the real meaning is. You know, we bypass it by buying things, you know, by throwing money at this occasion instead of what it really means, which for me and everybody, it's for everybody, it's different. For me, it's really an occasion to contemplate the meaning of not just our ancestors' lives, but also of how they are informing us today and what way they take shape within us today. And I want to say that for me, Dia de los Muertos, for me, I love what you said, Denise, that, you know, for you, Dia de los Muertos is every day and that your house is an altar. In fact, that we could say that the way we live is an altar, you know, our lives are an altar.
Absolutely.
And for me, because I've been so nomadic in the last 25 years, you know, I've moved around from California, Colorado, Texas. I moved around so much. I've always carried the altar with me, a very mobile, transportable altar, you know, and it's always in the same box. And every time I come to a new space, the first thing I do is open that up and set it up into the place and have a little ceremony. I love it. It really touched me that you are in the room where you were born in, and that you will one day pass in, probably to the next realm. To me, that's so sacred, because I'm so far from that kind of a reality. I've moved around so much, but coming back, coming to here, to the borderlands, coming to this trifecta borderlands of Mexico, Nuevo Mexico, and Texas, is my ancestral origins. Those three are my ancestral origins. And it's lately, I've been writing a lot about the altar. I feel like the altar is finally going to have a home now. It's returned home. I've returned it home. Mm-hmm. And I feel like so it's allowed me to contemplate not just my own grandparents, my own lineage, but also the landscape from which I've come from and the people of this land in a new way. And so, yeah, you know, I feel like for me, I've returned home finally. That's one of the meanings of the very many threads of meanings that I've been able to make of the altar of my ancestors. But, you know, yeah.
You know, I was born in Fresno, California, lived there most of my life. But my dad is from where I'm living now. He's from West Texas. Mm. And my grandmother was born in Belle Marais, you know, which is also right near.
Oh, great.
My grandfather was born in Pecos, you know. And so when I came back here, one of the feelings that I felt was that I was returning home spiritually. On some level, I was returning home. And I was going to come to El Paso. I was going to work at UTEP for 5 years and then move on. You know, I thought of El Paso as literally El Paso from here to there, you know, but, the land just kept me. And I feel like I'm really in touch with my antepasados, I guess.
Same here. Yeah. I had planned to originally just come for 5 years too, 5 years and then move on. That was kind of the thought too. But all of a sudden I found myself even reliving some of the cycles here that my grandparents had lived once upon a time. And when I caught that, when I came to that realization, oh, wow, I'm in the same cycle that my grandfather was. I'll be very specific about this. My grandmother died at a very young age, at 40, right here in Deming, New Mexico, right here. And she died at the age of 40. My family's all from Columbus. And she died at the age of 40 from breast cancer and left my grandfather, Alejandro, here with six children on his own in this borderlands, you know, to raise them on his own. And all of a sudden, 8 years ago, I found myself a single father here too, and starting to even succumb to some of the same things that my grandfather had gone through. And when I realized that, I said, no, it's mine to heal. Like, we have to change the narrative. So absolutely.
Wow.
Well, I understand that completely, because my mother died at age 73. I'm 74. But my sister died at age 73, both of them of liver cancer. And I said, that is not my narrative. Yeah. That is not me. And when people say, oh, you look so much like your mother, I say, yes, thank you so much, but I'm me. I think it's important to acknowledge the ancestors, but to acknowledge their suffering, their lives, who they were, but to understand that we are a movement from a clarification, a healing of that ancestral trauma, suffering, whatever it is that our parents and families went through. It's not surprising that the two of you are back, because you were being called to come and heal here in one way or another. Well, you can imagine the layers of being when you live in the same place for all your life. I think of something that Terry Tempest Williams said, the writer from Utah, nature environmental writer, such a wise woman she is. She talks about there are the people that go and the people that stay. It's not easy to stay in a place and live in a place that doesn't afford you a decent living sometimes.
Yeah.
That doesn't value you, that neglects you in certain ways, but you stay because the stories are there, and because this is your ofrenda, this is your offering to the world. is to be on that altar of stories that are yours. And those stories can be set in different places, but ultimately the bedrock of your own altar is where you choose to live and where your ancestors chose to live. And so I applaud you both for coming back. You may take off again, and that's perfectly fine to travel, but one always has to come home.
Something you said, to go back to that, you know, my every day I have an altar, my home is an altar. And I think I've been doing that on unconscious levels, but now that you mention it, I'm aware of how much I do it. I have a closet in my office, and it's a walk-in closet, and I just have books in there. I'm very fortunate to have a great office, but I started to put pictures of the dead. You know, what happened, I had this friend, his name was Ken Cedra. I'll give him a name. So if he's available, you know, he that somebody's thinking about him, but he was killed in a drug deal. I mean, he was just shot. They came into his garage and just shot him. And he was always a bad kid. And when I was hanging out with him, we were both bad kids doing bad things, you know, but I was thinking of him. And so I Googled him. And the only thing I found was a little article about his death. And his murder, and a little picture. And I printed out the picture and I put it on my wall, and I played a song that I knew he liked, which was a song by that rock band Boston. And then I put my friend Andres Montoya, the poet, put his pictures up there, my mom. And before you know it, I had this wall of the dead, and I don't think I realized what I was doing. And in our living room, my wife and I have pictures of all of our dead matriarchs, my mom, her mom, her grandmother. And that's what I've been doing all along. But thank you for letting me realize that, because it somehow makes it more, I don't know, sacred.
Well, I think you need to bring it out of the closet first. My mother's first husband was accidentally poisoned. And I write about this in A Taco Testimony, Meditations of Family, Food, and Culture. For years, my sister and I would go in the closet, and my mother had his photograph, their wedding photograph, in her closet. Who is that man? Who is he? I didn't realize until much, much later, I was adult, that was my mother's first husband, who was poisoned by the doctor, accidentally poisoned. In respect for my father, even though he divorced her and left us, she had the picture of her first husband in the closet. Why didn't she bring it out all of those years? Because she was respecting my father. So your manda is to bring those photos out of the closet.
But on the other hand, that closet is sacred space to me. I mean,
well, you may want to keep it there.
It's a walk-in closet. I took out all the stuff that where they used to be, hanging.
Oh, it's a little man cave. It's a little cave, huh?
It's like a contemplative room. I got books and just a
chair. Well, it's a prayer room.
That's kind of more like what it's like, because I don't spend a lot of time in it, but I feel like it's sacred, and I put sacred things in it.
Well, there you go. Meditation. You don't have to apologize to me. We all have those sacred spaces.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing when you're building an altar, whether you do it with the different levels, you can do 3 levels, 4 levels, 7 levels, however many levels you want. For those that are working on altars, I think find the sacred space in your house that is sacred to you. For example, right behind you is a sacred space with that candle. I'm so glad you lit that. Your closet is the sacred space. Find that space and create some altar there, something that means something to you. Right. And don't think that you're going to put it together right away. You might put a photograph. And then you might put a candle. You want to think about putting the elements in there, the different elements, water, you know, things that move, whatever. But an altar is constructed over time. You just don't throw an altar together. And for those of you that are building altars out there for the first time, it's like a painter. You go up, you look at it, you come back, you go see what's que me falta, what do I need, what do I need to move over here. So in a way, that's the writing process, isn't it? We're artists of our own altars.
Yes, yes. And you know,
this invitation is for everyone, even if you didn't grow up with Dia de los Muertos being part of your cultural heritage or your cultural traditions. You know, everyone can honor their own ancestors with an altar.
Words on a wire.
Words on a wire.